cars are out. Your ride is clear. The 23 will be the best year yet. Let's be honest, babe. It's not a very high bar to clear.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Take Me to Your Reader, discussing adapted science fiction at its best and worst. I'm Seth.
I'm James.
And I'm questioning why you paused there, but I'm Colin.
I almost said James. I almost said I was James. But no, it's science fiction, right?
And is it science fiction?
Well, that's the question, right? Because we are going to do a little diversion into some graphic novel-based fiction. Not always science fiction. A lot of superhero stuff is more fantasy, right?
Oh, yeah. Right. Brandon Sanderson recently gave a lecture at the Tolkien Society convention, get together at Oxford, and he was looking and applying his definition to what is fantasy. And one of the quotes out of that is that science fiction is the realm of the plausible. Fantasy is the realm of the impossible.
Oh, nice.
And so I think we're pretty solidly in fantasy here.
Okay.
But we've done fantasy in the past.
Our podcast, our rules, and we decided it would be easier if we could just read some comics instead of having to always read a regular book. And we also, you know, sorry, we didn't release anything in June. James had some unexpected travel come up, and so we thought, okay, let's flip them, because we were going to do Judge Dredd first.
Right, right.
But we just were like, we're not going to have time to watch both those movies and read all the comics and that kind of stuff. So we punted that one to later this month. So we'll bring you two graphic novel-based adaptations in June. So
July.
I said, right. Yeah, whatever.
The other month is Arthur J.
Whenever you're listening to this, you'll get two this month. Person in the future. Yes. Okay. So since we're talking about comics for the first time, because a long time ago, I think we had maybe Colin had presented.
No, this isn't the first time. 8 o'clock in the morning. That was a comic.
Was it? I mean, it was a short story as well.
Short story.
There was a comic.
Yeah, but wasn't there a comic?
Yeah, we've done stuff that had comics, but not that was originally a comic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All You Need Is Kill started off as light.
A light novel.
Then was adapted to a graphic novel.
Yeah.
True.
So we did that.
All right, fine.
Yeah, but this is the first one where like something started life as...
All right. I cede my time, Chairman.
Yes. Okay. Well, I'm reclaiming my time.
Aside from the Stallone movie.
Right. Guardian.
No.
We have the technology.
I always forget the name of that movie, actually. Every time it comes out, we talk about it. I remember everything about the movie except the freaking name of it.
Samaritan.
Yep. Yes. Sad.
Yeah. Anyhow. This is still the first one. First in this series. And we haven't really talked about, you know, because of on that episode, it was an interview as well, right?
Yeah.
But so I want to talk about like our sort of some of our comic book fandom and that kind of stuff, our relationships with it. And then talk about, you know, the intricacies of how do you break down a comic book adaptation into movie? Hmm. Did you read comics when you were younger?
On and off. At the barbershop, I did.
Okay.
And then once I started being able to check out my own books from the library, they had compilation volumes of like origin stories for Captain America and Spider-Man and then
Omnibuses.
Some of the top hits from all those guys.
Nice.
And then in the late 80s, I started started reading my friends' comic books, DC and Marvel, and then collecting my own.
Okay.
And I did that up until like my second or third year in college.
And you don't still have them?
I do still have them.
You do?
I do.
Okay. Do you know what is the unicorn in your collection?
I'm going to guess it is the Doctor Who comics.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Nice.
In fact, one of those comics may be adapted.
Okay. What about you, James?
I never collected them, because to me they were too expensive at the time.
Yeah.
But I did read a lot, I mean, I always had friends that had comics or I'd hang out. I played a lot of other games, too, board games, card games, et cetera, and all that's all in the same shop. So I go to the same shop and spend all day there reading comics, playing card games, et cetera, et cetera.
Nice. Do you have a favorite comic book character?
Spider-Man.
Yeah. Figured that.
No doubt.
Yep. Wait, do you have a favorite comic book character?
I don't know if I have a favorite. I have a lot that I like.
Yeah, I think I would struggle to come up with an absolute favorite. But for me, we'd go into Safeway in the Diamond Center Mall in Anchorage, and they had the little turnstiles with comics that would come out every couple of weeks.
Oh.
I mean, I remember you were talking about finding mass market paperbacks in the grocery store or something.
Yeah, that's how I found Redwall. It's how I got my Ender's Game book.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a good thick handful of them.
Yeah, so where they had the those wire turnstiles with books and magazines on them.
Yeah.
That's where I would shop for. Erin, my eldest sister, had a bunch of like Justice League and Legion of Superheroes and World's Finest and Teen Titans. So Teen Titans was the comics that I kind of grew up on. And those were the ones that I would actually go and buy the new Tales of the Teen Titans as it came out. So I was doing that when the Judas Contract came out, which was this big thing with Deathstroke the Terminator, who's one of my favorite comic book characters. Villain, and then in the post-New 52, what did they call it? Rebirth. They kind of rebranded him as sort of gray.
Kind of more anti-hero.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really enjoyed some of those comics. I've been hoping to see a good adaptation of him to live action. I had a lot of hopes for the Ben Affleck directed Batman movie that was going to have Joe Manganiello or whatever his name is as Deathstroke.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that would have been cool because like Ben Affleck's a big dude and Joe M is a big dude. And like that would have been a cool fight, but never happened.
Nope. Didn't Deathstroke show up in the Green Arrow television show?
Yes, he did show up in season two of Arrow. Actually, yeah. Season one. As soon as he introduced himself, I squeed a little bit. I was like, Slade Wilson, that's awesome. So yeah.
I like that guy as Deathstroke too. He was cool.
Yeah. Anyway. Manu Bennett. Yeah. He was cool. So then, how do you enjoy comics? I mean, like what is it? I mean, do you still read many?
No. I really am not a big fan of the multiverse that has come across all of the different major comic series.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just because it makes the story too complicated or?
Well, it's like,
it tends to erase a lot of stakes, right?
Yeah. I don't know. So you know, I like things that were canonical. And so I have locked in on the things that I read when I was younger.
Okay.
And changes to that, I'm not such a big fan of.
Okay. So, yeah, like Silver Age comics are probably about where you were reading them when you were a kid.
Oh, no. I was reading and collecting mainstream like X-Men and X-Force and several others. Right. But mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That would have been late 80s, early 90s, mm-hmm. Way before the multiverse came in.
Well, The Flash, I mean, I don't know if it was the first multiverse in comics, but The Flash of Two Worlds is a very famous one where Barry Allen crosses over with Jay Garrick.
Oh, wow.
Finds himself in the other universe.
Yeah, well, Silver Age versus modern age.
Golden Age and Silver Age, yeah. Because, and then in the 1980s, DC did the big, huge crossover universe-spanning Crisis on Infinite Earths where they wanted to smash down the multiverse into something more manageable. And so they had the Anti-Monitor there destroying universes. I suspect Avengers Doomsday is going to crib a little bit from that, but we'll see.
Well, I mean, Marvel does a lot of that
too. Yeah, they do a lot of that as well.
On its own.
Yeah. Well, it's so in defense of multiverses, it makes it really easy to tell one-off stories or stories that are not connected to any existing continuity, right? Where I think you like the idea of there is continuity and it should always be this way. Spider-Man can never grow organic web shooters or, you know, that kind of thing.
There was a storyline where and we're going to get that in Spider-Man 4, where his genes mutated and he became much more spider-like.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that.
Okay.
It would be like making all the Star Trek books canonical. Right?
Yeah.
And so I knew that, you know, the thing that kept Star Trek alive for a good long time were those novels. That's where interest and fandom in Star Trek kind of went to and appreciating things that had been made. But saying that all those stories were part of canon is something very different.
Right.
You know, until recently, they never adopted a multiverse.
Yeah.
And that made some money, but not much else.
I'd push back on Star Trek and the multiverse because the mirror universe has been a thing for a long time.
Right.
Going back to the original series.
True. So I guess there were like, there's the Kelvin timeline and there's the mirror universe and then there's the...
Yeah. So when you were reading comics or if you were to get back into it, like, is the art important?
Oh, very, very important.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely comics that I've read where I'm like, wow, there's not a lot of story here, but this sure is beautiful to look at.
Yeah.
And then there's other stuff like I really enjoy like the Alex Ross stuff like Kingdom Come and Justice, where it's this almost sort of watercolor look to it. And then the story is really cool as well. Mm. And everything looks really golden agey, where like none of the superheroes have abs, right? They look like old-timey baseball players to me.
Okay.
Everybody's a little chunky. But still but like classic carnival strongman look, right? They weren't ripped, they were just strong.
Well, and they were big.
And that's what, you know, Superman's look was based on, that look, right?
Yeah, it's funny looking back on the OG Superman comics, or even like Superman, Spider-Man, Batman, all that kind of art style.
Yes,
is like very. It's weird to look at now, I guess, right?
It is, because there's lots of times where you're like, wait, you don't recognize that this guy who works in your office is the fittest man you've ever seen or will ever see. Yeah,
how do you not know that suit?
I think that's where Christopher Reeve did a really good job, because he wore a suit well, but he wasn't like buff ripped, right? Like, he didn't wear like tight shirts. He was always immaculately dressed. But then when he changed into the Superman outfit, which was much more form fitting, then you could say, oh yeah, the guy's big.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And there's some comic runs of Superman that do a good job showing kind of how he changes his posture and everything when he's
bend over a little bit, hunch your shoulders, tuck down.
Yeah, All-Star Superman.
Be a little more meek and whatnot. Yeah.
If you want to hear me talk more about Superman, by the way, I did a cool and like a retrospective about Superman, about the Superman and Lois show after it ended, with Michael Gabriel, my friend, who's Superman is his favorite fictional character. And that was a fun thing to talk about. But so would you say, Colin, continuity is important to you in comics?
Yes.
Okay.
Like, it would be hard to dive back into the X-Men now after not reading it for 20 years.
Yeah,
I don't know all the things that happened between. Start,
right? And that's why there's periodic reboots, right? Or like events like the Absolute Universe for DC, where it's like, this is not your parents' Superman, right? This is we're changing a fundamental thing about Superman and Batman and the Flash,
you know?
And it is connected to continuity, because it's a thing that one of the characters did to cause it to happen, but everything that happens in there isn't connected to. You can jump on right now, and if all you know is a little bit about the character, you can still enjoy them. And yeah, they kind of periodically do that kind of thing. And, you know, DC did it with the New 52, where they're reimagining all the characters and everybody hated it. And so they're like, all right, well, we've got to reboot it again. So they did the DC Rebirth, which was really cool, actually.
Like, I think it'd be fun to pick up a new comic book series from any, you know, publisher, and follow it from the very beginning for a while.
A brand new one, new characters.
Yeah, brand new one, new characters, new ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you may not want to go with the big studios for that.
They don't tend to do things like that.
Go to Image Comics or 2000 AD.
Well, Dark Horse. They don't really have Dark Horse. Whole lot of incentive to do that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to just keep, I mean, this is a jaded part of me, I guess, keep making money as they can.
Yeah, but if you think about the history,
same characters over and over. But
in the history of it, I mean, Spider-Man was a new character at some point. Batman was a new character at some point. Everybody took a chance at some point, and you know, it succeeded or failed. Now it's just kind of wash, rinse, and recycle. And I think that's where the multiverse comes in, because they want to tell new stories, but they're so hemmed in by history and canon. And
Well, that's what I kind of think can be good about the multiverse, if you do it right. Because then you do get to kind of have new characters that are, you know, that aren't too different than the ones you're used to. So it's an easier transition or change into someone new. Like Miles Morales, for instance, right?
Yeah.
You got the new Spider-Man, but he's still a Spider-Man. And you could take the whole Spider-Verse for that matter. You got all these different ideas of what Spider-Man or, you know, Spider-Woman or girl could be. And they go ahead and spin that off because they have a multiverse to do it with. It gives them opportunity to explore and create new characters without having to completely destroy what you know already of some other characters.
Yes.
I think over time, too, like Sturgeon's Law comes into effect, that 80% of everything is crap, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, the stuff that endures is the stuff that you know, you actually remember.
Yeah.
That, like, they split something off and create, you know, Batman Beyond or something. And it's like, it's a completely different thing.
Right.
But and it's able to gain its own fandom. But sometimes it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
Because, like, almost every comic book character you can name has, you know, different versions where it's a different person, a different fictional biography of the character.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's somebody passing on the mantle, like with Blue Beetle or
Batman Beyond.
Or Robin, you know, lots of different Robins or
Nightwing.
There's only been one Nightwing, though.
Well, he was a Robin.
Yeah. But different Spider-Men. Spider's Man.
Yes. Spider's Peoples.
Yes.
Spider People.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, what about you, James? I mean, like, is continuity important to you? Art, story? What do you hang your hat on with comics?
No, not terribly. I enjoy the flexibility of having the multiverse. In fact, one of my favorite ones to read recently has been...
Apologies for the train, by the way, everyone. We're recording on my patio.
Ah, yes. crap. Why am I forgetting his name now? The magic dude in DC.
Constantine?
Constantine, Zatanna? Thank you.
Oh. Oh, yeah, you like the Justice League Dark stuff, right?
Yeah. And so what I like about reading Constantine is he's constantly, basically tricking demons and crap like that and doubles or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that every time he does that, he tweaks the magic that is in that universe. Mm. And it totally just screws up a universe or changes things.
Oh.
And so he's constantly breaking reality.
That is occupational hazard. Yeah.
It's the flux of comics.
Yeah. And so all of a sudden he'll be in some weird version of London or something and oh crap, what happened?
Yeah. All right, I think we should probably move on to the actual topic of the episode.
Fair,
but
fair
I think point. I figured we should have some preamble about that kind of thing because we're going to be talking about Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, by Tom King, which is at least partly the basis for the new Supergirl movie that's currently in theaters and not doing very well. So
I would like to right now point out the irony in that name, title,
Woman of Tomorrow.
Yes.
Why is that?
Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean that there's that kind of thing always comes up in movies and comics and stuff.
Why is it Supergirl? Supergirl?
Yeah. In the first episode of Supergirl on the CW, mm-hmm. they had Calista Flockhart as Cat Grant mm-hmm. talk about how no, it's a fine name. You know, I can be a girl and still be rich, hot, and amazing. So
it was never Superman though, or in Superboy. I mean. Never Spider-Boy either.
No, Superboy is a character.
16 and being Spider-Man.
Yeah, Superboy is a character, and canonically, earlier.
Yeah, but Superman was never Superboy. He was Superman. Right?
No, that's not correct. But
oh, okay. Oh, never mind. All right, I stand corrected.
When he started off only as Superman. Supergirl right. started off only as Supergirl, and then later on they made a Superboy comic. Is that the point you're trying to make, James?
No, the point I'm trying to make is there was never... Original Superman, when he became a superhero, he was never Superboy. He was just Superman.
Right. Okay. I get what you're saying. In terms of comic book origins, the way the characters were introduced, he was introduced as a man, right?
Yes.
And then they show the backstory. And then there are comic runs of Clark Kent younger in his mm-hmm. life as sort of Superboy. And then there's other, Superboy Prime, who's this, I think.
Is there even a Superwoman now? Think about comic run at all?
Yes. Oh. Yeah. There's things where Lois becomes.
Is it Kara or someone else?
It's not Kara. It's usually Lois Lane.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
I kind of felt like this comic ended with Superwoman because it was 300 years later at the end.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, I'm not sure if it was, but we'll get back to that. time may be different in the Phantom Zone.
Oh, that's certainly possible.
But yeah, history with Supergirl. Have you ever read any Supergirl comics prior to this?
No.
No? Or watched any Supergirl media?
Not really. Just whatever was on, crossovers and stuff.
Okay. What about you, Colin?
I saw the movie back in the day.
1984 movie. Yeah. It is one of the movies I've seen.
But we're not talking about it.
No, we're not talking about it. We're not talking about that one. James adamantly refused to watch that movie.
What? Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
thanks.
He's like, yeah, no, no.
I don't even really like to go back and watch the old Superman movies because they're just terrible.
I agree. I don't think they hold up at all. Uh-uh.
Although I do like Gene Hackman.
Yes, I do as well.
But I'm like, I can't do it. This is too bad.
Well, so this is the other thing. And the reason that I accepted the not doing Super, and the reason I argued for not watching the Supergirl 1984 movie is because this movie is at least partially based on a specific run of Supergirl.
Yeah.
Where that older movie, maybe there was stuff in the comic books that it was based on, but this is the difference. And in some of these episodes that we do, the adaptation is of the character or the world or both, but not of a specific comic book run.
Well, even when we did, the one I like to harp on is Jumper.
Right.
Jumper adapts the shell of a character, his name, and the concept that he can teleport.
Yes.
And you get a little bit of his origin story, but then after that, everything else is just completely different.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Where yeah, in some of these things where we'll be able to find like, hey, this movie was adapted from a specific run of comics. And this is one of them. I think most of them though are going to be, you know, this is adapting this character based on the characters created by someone, you know,
right.
Not based on a story by Tom King. So yeah, that'll be interesting when we get to those. Where this one, actually, I didn't watch during the movie to see if it was actually based on this comic.
Oh no, I didn't either.
I'll have to check. I think if I said it was adapted, I would say it loosely based on.
At best,
because yeah. it has sort of the setting of it and so we'll get to talking about it. My history with Supergirl, yeah, I saw the 1984 movie as well. I watched Smallville. There was a Supergirl character on there that was kind of awesome because she was like making fun of Clark because he couldn't fly. She's like, I guess girls do mature faster. Then I watched all of the Supergirl show on the CW. It started on CBS, actually. Okay. The first season was on CBS, so the budget was higher.
Oh, really?
And and I liked the fact that they introduced Martian Manhunter, which was cool. And they did a little red herring with that, where they gave him a character name that was from, like, Reign of the Supermen after the death of Superman.
Oh.
And the famous fight with Doomsday. And then there were all these sort of people trying to take on the mantle, and one of them was John Henry Irons, and that's what they named him. And then, so everybody's like, oh, is he going to be Cyborg Superman? And he wasn't. He was Martian Manhunter. So with the Supergirl show, the Incomparable decided to do a listener kind of contribution podcast, flashcast mm-hmm. for it, mm-hmm. Where they had one host from the Incomparable come on, and then a bunch of fans of the podcast right. contribute to it.
Okay.
And so I put my hat in the ring for that and said, hey, I'd be willing to edit if nobody else can do it. And I did edit it for a long time. I didn't do it toward the end. I handed it off to somebody else, but because eventually it whittled down to just basically two people, mm-hmm. Trish and David. Gotcha. And but for a long time I was editing for them. But it helped me, you know, improve as an editor, and it gave me inroads into the Incomparable to invite a bunch of those people on as guests.
Oh, cool.
So I had like 10 people on from the Incomparable and from that
that's fun.
That podcast.
Yeah.
Over time. So it was good for me. But I read a whole bunch of Supergirl comics in the lead up to that.
Okay.
And I really enjoyed the New 52 run because she's more powerful than Superman, because mm-hmm. Superman has grown up on Earth learning to pull his punches his whole life to not accidentally kill people.
Right.
So she shows up and she's got no restraint.
Right.
And she was really, really angry. and so she ends up joining the Red Lantern Corps because of her rage.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so that was a cool crossover.
That's cool.
With that Atrocitus.
I do like how she basically has like a space pillow for screaming into.
Yes. Oh, the sun?
No.
No. When she flies up into space and goes,
Yeah.
Because in the comic, it says something like if she did that on atmosphere, it would destroy the planet or something.
Yeah. So
for the comic, which came out between 2021 and 22, mm-hmm. it was a really interesting, it's not told from Supergirl's point of view. It's told from Ruthie's point of view.
Yeah.
And should we do like a plot overview?
I think so.
Okay. So there's a young girl on a planet and her father is killed and she is determined to avenge him. And so she goes into town and, you know, says, my father had this awesome sword. I'll give it to anyone who will take me to this Kingsguard and, you know, helps me kill him. And I need somebody good. Mm-hmm. And someone just tries to take the sword from her. And it turns out the planet has a red sun and Supergirl is there because it's her birthday and she's drinking. And she kind of ends up rescuing Ruthie, but the guy who killed her father steals Supergirl's ship. As he does that, he shoots Crypto, her dog, with some poison arrows. Mm-hmm. And so now Supergirl.
And shoots Supergirl a couple times.
Yeah, but it didn't seem to bother her as much.
Well, it was a red sun planet, so she was wounded.
She was wounded, but not like Crypto.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And so Supergirl is now committed to going and finding this guy because they need a sample of the poison in order to save Crypto's life.
Right.
Well, I think he had the antidote. That's what it was.
Not in the comic.
Yeah, not in the comic.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's not her father's sword in the comic. It's Krem's sword. He just leaves it behind.
Right.
But it's a well-crafted sword. And so she decides, I can use this to bribe somebody to help me. And the first person she meets is, you know, that's the thing, like people say about doomsday planning, right? You're just collecting stuff for stronger people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is one of the interesting things about the comic is it's not she's not really the main character.
Supergirl.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Ruthie is kind of the main character. Well, at least she's the narrator, right? And so she's telling the story and tells you right at the beginning, not all of this is true. I'm going to lie to you a little bit.
She does that? Because I read it twice and I never...
She kind of tells you... she's like, oh, but we'll get back to that later. So she kind of spoils some of the ending.
If I remember, she does present herself as an unreliable narrator. Because it's coming from memory. And by the time we get to the end of the story, it's been a really long time.
Well, right. Seth is going to bring that into doubt. But you're right. I mean, Ruthie starts off as probably someone in their mid to late teens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the end of the story, she is quite old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's kind of hinted at through the book. In fact, there's a quote here I'm going to zing Seth with later.
Okay.
But it starts off with, in my long and peripatetic life.
Yeah. No, I'm not doubting that she's old.
Okay. It's just her age.
And the ending is may or may not be what actually happened, right?
Right. I don't think it's super ambiguous, but.
Yeah. It's more direct than the movie.
Well, I don't know about that.
It's way more direct in the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, let's circle back to that.
Yeah, we get the tag team Seth. All right. Let's go, Colin.
Yeah.
Oh, behave.
And so they actually, Supergirl, because she's been on a red planet, can't fly. And Ruthie can't go either. Right. And so they hop a space bus.
Right.
And have adventures on the space bus. Mm-hmm. And eventually catch up with the person who murdered her dad, Krem of the Yellow Hills.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then things get debatable.
Interesting.
But there's a lot of things they see on these adventures.
Yeah.
It's a lot of it is like completely horrific.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the blues versus the purples.
Yeah. Krem hitches his wagon to the brigands, right? Who are these galactic space pirates who go around and kind of Thanos their way through everything, right? Where only with less impartiality, right?
Yeah.
I mean, less of a questionable moral drive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because like Thanos had a purpose. That
right.
He believed he was doing.
He wasn't doing
the moral, immoral thing.
Yeah. He wasn't saying we might leave you alone if you give us enough stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Or if
you
give us all your stuff, and you tell us who to kill.
Yeah.
Like the purples.
Right.
Right.
Well, the blues did that to the purples.
Yeah.
And so they're pursuing him. They're following him for a long time.
Right.
Months and months.
Yeah. Yeah. And they catch up to him at some point, and Supergirl's like, I got the upper hand here. And he turns around and he goes, ha, magic.
Yep.
And throws that orb at her. It's Morbin time.
Morbius?
Some sort of magic orb.
Mordru globe.
Yes.
It's like a Horcrux, like you have to kill a bunch of people in order to create one using magic.
Right.
And then it allows you to teleport somebody to where you want to put them. And then he teleports her to a green sun planet.
Yeah. Well, green and yellow sun planet.
In the comic,
just green.
Yeah.
I believe.
Is it?
It is. Once the sun, and it's like.
Oh, once the sun sets, then she can recover and.
Yeah. Because no stellar radiation goes through. Whole planets. Right. I guess it's not neutrinos that cause the issues.
No.
Once you take off and you're away from that planet, well, then the green sun shows back up because the planet's not in the way anymore.
Oh, no, no. So you're traveling completely in the umbra.
You're far
the whole
enough.
Way.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. In any case, not science fiction, right?
Right.
No.
None of this makes a whole lot of sense because I was reading in just like on the Wikipedia page. Sorry, Dr. Sue. For Kryptonians, and they're like, because they live under a yellow sun or an orange red sun, when they're under a yellow sun, then they get all these great powers. I'm like, but Ruthie is from a red sun planet,
right?
And she doesn't get superpowers when they go to places with yellow sun.
But she's not a Kryptonian,
right? But
the point being that it's not the red sun that's doing the trick.
The way it was written, at least in that Wikipedia article, it made it sound like it was just
this is why you don't trust
sun.
Wikipedia,
exactly, right.
No, it was the Kryptonian physiology and the red sun.
Yeah, James and I were talking about that before you arrived.
Yeah.
And so the graphic novel does a good job of developing Krem as a truly loathsome character.
Right? Sure.
Right.
Somebody that is worthy of being struck down. and the world might be a better place with him struck down. But in order to do that, it shows you some very horrific stuff that he and the brigands do.
Yeah.
And, right. And it also develops Supergirl's character quite a bit, kind of showing you what kind of a person she is when she helps dig the mass graves. Right. And then it sprinkles in little bits about her origin as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there's some, I don't want to say character development, but more like Ruthie gives a bunch of reflections on the things that she thinks about Kara from the time she spent with her. Right. It's not that Supergirl, how do I describe this? Because Ruthie did such a great job of it.
Yeah.
She has to continually hold in her superpowers.
Yeah.
So that she does not.
I copied that into my notes here where it says, she did not choose to fire a beam from her eyes or have the breath of ice or run faster than a speeding bullet or any of her other well-documented miracles. No, she held back her heat vision to look you in the face. She warmed her breath to converse with you. She slowed herself to walk by your side.
Right. Yeah. And then it caused her pain to do that.
Yes. Yeah.
It took effort and she found it worthy of doing to be with us that way.
Yeah.
And her method of speaking is extremely interesting.
Ruthie?
Yes.
Yeah, in the parts where it's like excerpts from her book, it's very formal. But then when she's just speaking with Kara, it's very bumpkin. You know, I ain't going to do that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and she learns to swear from Supergirl.
As one does.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you're Supergirl, and you don't give a bleep about arrows. I had remembered that at the beginning, because I read it when it was nominated for the Hugo for Best Graphic Story, did not win. I had remembered Supergirl as being more jaded, but she's really just sort of out to party. But through the course of it, you start to see more of the swearing occurring, where she's clearly, it's gotten under her skin. The things that she's seeing.
Yes.
Yeah. It was interesting that you kind of see that decline of her, not of her character, but of her patience, sort of, or like her willingness to...
The amount of F's in her jar.
Exactly, yes. Look upon my field of F's and see that it is barren. Yes. Because like, there's the one place where the locals catch one of the brigands and stone him to death, and Supergirl does not intervene.
Right.
And that's unusual, I think, for her character.
Well, it would be unusual for Superman. Maybe not Supergirl.
Yeah, yeah. I think at any other time, if Supergirl had not seen the things she'd seen,
right,
she might have made a different choice there.
So then we should talk about a couple of things, and I think we should talk about the endings.
Yeah.
So I am surprised that you did not get triggered by a certain phrase.
What was that?
And this is the phrase. In my long and peripatetic life, which I read at the beginning of this quote earlier,
yes,
I admit to having set my feet on the sod of countless planets, and on each of them, time and occasion permitting, I have undertaken to find their particular version of peach pie, and I can't honestly claim to have found one that I thought was happy, which is the largest peach pie slam I have ever read in literature or seen in any kind of visual media. But with you and your love of peach pie, I'm kind of like, I figured there would be some F's given there.
No,
maybe verbally.
The way I can make this canon here is that she is just struggling with the literalness of the metaphor, right? This is very delicious, but it's not happy.
Well, maybe she hasn't been to Earth yet.
She hasn't experienced
your peach pie.
Yeah, right, she hasn't been to Georgia, right?
Right.
Or Oregon has very good peaches.
Sure.
And they become ripe in July, and it's a great time. Yeah, it's kind of like in Battle Beyond the Stars, where they give the guy the hot dog, and he takes a bite of it, and he says, there's no dog in this.
You never know, though.
Yeah. Yes. No, I will stand for that peach pie slander. Because I think she was looking to figure out why anybody would say that it was happy.
Well, I think that you were supposed to eat the pie and become happy.
Yes.
And that didn't do anything for her.
Yeah. I mean, happiest pie is definitely something I've heard. Happiest peach pie specifically, I don't think I've heard. So, happy as a clam.
Right. Yeah. And wasn't that from a blue?
I think it was from a blue. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Even more suspicious.
Yeah. That was dark. Yeah. And so the green planet is not just, the problem isn't just that the sun is green, it's that there's dinosaurs as well.
Well, and right. It was designed to entrap Superman.
Yeah.
And it worked pretty well.
Yeah. And then of course, she catches back up with him And he tries it again, but then convenient super right. horse, magic horse.
Then Comet comes along.
Yes. Winged horse,
yep.
Who is evidently a classic comic book character that kind of was in the golden age of comics because they had stuff like the Super Family, right?
Oh, really?
Like the Bat family, too.
Yeah.
Oh, right, right.
And the Marvel family, you know, the Shazam and his family.
Yep.
And so Crypto, the super dog, and there was a monkey as well. So the super pets, right?
Nice.
I think there was a recent, was it a show or a movie?
No, it was a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was Crypto and Bat Hound, Bat Dog?
Yeah, I don't know. And that allows her to outrun the magic to the end of the universe, I guess,
right.
with Comet. And then come back, no relativistic effects at all.
None.
and then there's the question about what happens.
See, you said this wasn't science fiction.
Right.
So then there's the question of what happens at the end. There's the narration, and then there's the art.
Yeah.
And the two do not jive. So let's set the stage. Superwoman, mm-hmm. And obviously more aged Supergirl shows right. up on the planet and meets Ruthie, who is now an elderly woman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they Ruthie says, "Is it time?" And she says, "It's time." And they talk about how that Krem of the Yellow Hills had been put into the neutral zone.
Phantom Zone.
And for the first 100 years, he was a jerk. For the next 100 years, he was trying to figure things out. And for the last 100 years, he had actually worked very diligently to try and improve himself as a person.
Right.
And it's now time for his release. And so that gave me the idea that it had been 300 years since the events at the beginning of the book.
It's right? certainly possible.
Yeah. 300 years from whose perspective, though?
Yeah, that's my question. I mean, Ruthie is obviously much older. We don't know how old her species right. or how fast they age.
Right.
So it could be like Vulcans, you know, where they live 200-300 years. Or it could be 50 years or 60.
I kind of viewed it from whatever time the Phantom Zone is, I guess. So 300 years in the Phantom Zone. But I guess I don't know how they measure that anyway. So
I don't either.
Yeah. It's like Narnia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time flows differently.
Yeah.
Right.
But definitely a lot of time has passed. And yeah, Supergirl is all grown up and she's got different uniform, mm-hmm. you know, shinier
right,
boots.
Right.
And a different hairstyle and stuff.
And he doesn't look nearly as old as he should be looking if he's going to be 300 years old.
Right. And that might... That
she was drawn way older than what Krem was when he came back, when he was released from the Phantom Zone.
Well, I mean, there was probably 20 or 30 years of difference in their age in the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
I think there's still 20 or 30 years of difference at the end of the story. It's just that he hasn't been allowed to get a haircut or a shave.
Right, right. The difference between a 120-year-old and a 100-year-old.
Right.
You're both pretty old.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that may argue for literally 300 years.
Yeah, we just don't know.
Yeah. And I don't think it's important to know that.
Right. In the narration, it talks about Supergirl kills Krem of the Yellow Hills.
Mm-hmm.
But in the artwork, it shows Krem begging, you know, thanking Supergirl for putting him in the Phantom Zone and begging for Ruthie's forgiveness.
Yeah.
And Ruthie either kills him or smacks him with her cane.
Yeah, yeah.
There's like blood that flies off of him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming she killed him.
I wasn't totally sure about that, and I think it was deliberately left ambiguous.
I just figured
she just hit him and you know, like, yeah, here, you take your apology.
Yeah, because it turns out this whole time, the entire story was a farce. Crypto was not dying of poison.
Right.
They were gone for months. There's no way the poison would not have killed him in months and months' time, right?
Right.
Supergirl went with Ruthie to prevent her from getting revenge on Krem because of the way it would change her as a person from her heart and her soul.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the end, she either kills him or whacks him with her cane. And you know, neither one of those are great evidences of...
There's two possible endings. And it shows the one where Ruthie hits him with the cane.
Right.
Kills him or doesn't kill him. It's still a deed of violence, right? She refuses to forgive him. She hasn't had necessarily 300 years of softening feelings towards him.
No.
I think the fact that she got him to be penitent is important. You know, it's a redemption story, but not all redemption stories work out.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't spend the intervening 300 years with that staining her soul.
Yeah.
But if she whacks him after he asks for forgiveness, it doesn't exactly mean that there's the acceptance of the forgiveness either.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Or and then basically she says, but the true story here is, no, he didn't live in the Phantom Zone all that time. Mm-hmm. Supergirl killed him.
Is that the true story?
That's what she says.
Earlier in that same scene, Supergirl says, or no, Ruthie says, thank you for letting me blame you for his death. Because the Reavers, the brigands, will go after any person who takes on one of their member.
Right.
Right? And so what I think happens is that Ruthie writes this book. And the book is mentioned briefly in passing. And in the book, she gives Supergirl the kudos for killing Krem so that they assume that he's dead when he's actually in the Phantom Zone. Mm. And then she gets her revenge on him when he's released. That's my reading of it.
Yeah, that could be. I like the fact that I like the twist of it of, oh yeah, no, Crypto was never really any danger. I came along so that you wouldn't have to do this alone, you know, or stay here on your planet and stew with this for hundreds of years and never move on.
Mm-hmm. So you think that Supergirl had to take Ruthie to Krem and have her face him and be given the chance to kill him, but then decide not to do it because it's the right move.
I think Supergirl was helping her find some sort of sense of justice. And if he had just left the planet and disappeared, and Ruthie didn't go after him, there would be no justice.
Ruthie could have gone after him. They could have gone on the same bus.
Right.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing though, right? Is Ruthie probably would have gone after him no matter what.
And gotten
killed. And then Supergirl is like, I'm going to go to keep her alive because she's going to die out there.
Yeah.
She's not an interstellar traveler.
It is an interesting character thing where you have her essentially wanting, you know, Ruthie to learn the lesson that, you know, killing people is not a good idea, right? And then killing somebody or letting Ruthie kill him.
Right.
I think that's how it ties really well into the truth, justice, whatever.
Right.
Because all those things are malleable in their definition.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I really enjoy the graphic novel. I kind of like some of the ambiguity in it. I think I like the juxtaposition of Ruthie is down on the planet and Comet wants to go help Supergirl because she's in a lot of trouble because she's battling
the brigands.
The brigands, and they have kryptonite.
Yeah.
And so Comet realizes there's something wrong there, and Ruthie's like, go ahead. Nothing bad's going to happen here. You're good. and so he goes up there and essentially sacrifices himself for Supergirl. Meanwhile, then, so Ruthie's challenges Krem to a fight, more or less, right?
Yes.
And gets the better of him, but can't bring herself to murder him, execute him, if you want. And so then, yeah, what is the true story? Did she actually fail to kill him and let Supergirl take the blame for it? Or did Supergirl actually finish him off?
Well, you couldn't put him into the Phantom Zone if he was dead.
No, you couldn't. Well,
you can't put a dead body in this Phantom Zone?
Not and have it come back to life 300 years later.
Yeah, yeah. So
unless they have reanimators in the Phantom Zone.
Yeah, who knows?
So your take on it is that Supergirl didn't kill him. Ruthie recorded that she did in order to take the heat off of her.
Right.
But actually put him in the Phantom Zone.
Right.
Okay. I'm not totally sure I buy that, but I think it's a valid reading of it. What do you think?
I think Supergirl killed him.
And then they made up
the rest of the story. So that Ruthie didn't have to.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the whole Phantom Zone thing that we see at the end is...
Yeah, it's fiction.
That's made up in her book?
Yeah.
Hmm. See, but Supergirl had read the book.
Yeah, but I think it was made up in the book just to deflect off of Supergirl in the first place.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
Then you don't really know.
No, it says in the book... It says that in the book that Supergirl killed him. That's conclusive.
Yeah.
Right.
That's so there's no question about him going into the neutral Phantom Zone. Too much Star Trek in my life.
You had to bring up the Star Trek comics earlier.
I did.
No such thing. So then why the fiction of the Phantom Zone?
Why would the fiction of the Phantom Zone be there?
To muddy the water.
Yeah,
create ambiguity, I suppose.
Yeah, I think I like your interpretation of it better just because there's that moment where Supergirl is like, okay, I'm ending this. And Ruthie's, no, look, I learned the lesson. I learned it. And she says it louder and louder and louder. And for her to come back full circle and keep Supergirl from killing him would show some growth. Doesn't totally square with him, her braining him with her cane later.
No.
although it could be yes, I forgive you.
Whack. That's not how you forgive people, though. I'm fairly certain if... if my wife said, I forgive you, and then whacked me with her cane, there would be a, there would still be hard feelings after that moment.
Yeah, but she'd be over it.
Oh, yep, sure, she would.
The important part.
Yeah, and you know, maybe I would deserve it.
Right.
Yeah. He deserves to be beaten, just not murdered.
Yes.
Yeah, but yeah. Then there's the thing that's flying off of him. What is that?
Know. Well, she definitely.
You can still, draw blood and not kill people.
We don't know if she rolled a 20.
It could have been a tooth.
It might not have been.
It could have been a series of teeth.
It wasn't a nat 20. Yeah.
So what did you think of the art style in the book?
I really liked it. You know, I like some of the sort of more abstract stuff. One of my favorite comics of recent times was Absolute Martian Manhunter. Did you read that one yet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one's fun.
It was rad.
That reminds me of the Scanner Darkly.
yeah, kind of. I mean, it's like they let kids with finger paints loose on it. It's really kind of abstract and wild, and it makes sense in the thing. But
okay,
but yeah, I like.
It's got those pages in the so you brought it up. Ha! There's pages in the comic where you turn it upside down and then turn it backwards and you look at it up in the sunlight. And you'll see something completely different.
From the next page.
On the next page.
That bleeds through?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
I'm going to have to do an episode about the Absolute series just because I've enjoyed them a lot and I need to talk to some other people about it. But yeah, I like this. I like that it showed Supergirl going through battles and taking damage, right? Where she's, you know, authentic battle damage.
Right.
where she gets, you know, like here at the end when she's swinging the sword, she's got some wounds from that battle with the brigands.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I personally really enjoyed the prose. I like Ruthie's oddly formal, stilted way of talking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of that style of art.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you like more where it looks like a painting or more realistic? What do you or old timey comics with very clear lines between everything? Because this has, you know, some smear to it.
Yeah, there is some smear to it. I'm also not. I maybe it's more the framing. So it's not the artwork itself, but the way it's drawn versus the way it's drawn.
Mm.
I think a lot of it's really dark, muddied.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about you, James?
The opposite of Collins.
You like the book? Oh, you like the art?
I do like the flowy kind of all the frames do flow into each other.
Yeah.
And it's, I think the artwork complements the ambiguity of the whole situation because there's a lot of times where you can't tell exactly what's going on and you kind of have to infer it.
Yeah.
And then you get the end result of what's happened and then you're like, you can kind of infer what happened, but you don't really know, I suppose.
I feel like we're gonna talk for like 15 minutes about the movie, but
I like that.
I think it made sense to.
That's fine.
Overall,
I did enjoy the artwork. It kind of the way that they depicted like her suit and the flowy cape and all that stuff kind of reminded me of Absolute Superman.
Oh,
and I really enjoyed Absolute
Superman. Like a cloud
Superman,
of actually. Nanoparticles.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. I need to wrap up in the next 20 minutes or so. So let's go ahead and move on to talk about the movie. It is not doing well at the box office. I don't think it's made 100 million yet.
No. Last time I checked, it was 79 on a budget that's over twice that.
And you got to make that in the first weekend, or as a superhero movie, or you're not making back your budget, right?
No,
right.
There's some toxic fandom stuff that happens with female-led superhero movies in general.
Yeah.
But if the movie is really good, it find its audience, right? Where like Wonder Woman made a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
I think the original Captain Marvel made quite a bit. I don't think mostly the Madam Web was a disaster, but like it was worse than Morbius. But it wasn't because it was led by female characters. It's just it was a really crap story. The weird thing here is so overall, I'd say I enjoyed the movie, but I have a lot of problems with it, and a lot of the problems stem from looking at it as an adaptation, because there's so much left to this story.
Right.
Anytime you adapt anything, you have to you know you're adapting from a longer medium to a shorter medium. Even in the case of a graphic novel, right?
Not in the case of a graphic novel.
Not so much in the case of a graphic novel. I think
in this case.
I guess what you would argue is you could have done a pretty straight adaptation of this, still kept it under feature length, under 3 hours, you know, under 2.5 hours probably
easily.
But they clearly made a decision to emphasize certain parts of the story and de-emphasize other parts that I think were more important. The part of seeing just what Krem was up to and developing him as a character. Because in the comic, he's not superpowered. He's just nasty.
Yeah.
Right.
And And so, you know, he doesn't have the strength of 10 men, you know. I mean, he was no match for Supergirl anyway, even in the movie. But you didn't see, I don't feel like you saw enough of the atrocities to get her to the point of what happens at the end of the movie.
Right.
Okay, positives. I thought Millie Alcock was good as the character. It was a good representation of the comic book character from this graphic novel. Mm-hmm. I liked Lobo was fun. I will say you do not need to draw abs on someone who clearly doesn't have abs right now.
No.
Because he looked like Weird Al from the Rambo segment of UHF. I'm like, okay, it's okay that he's let himself go a little bit. Just we don't need to put CG abs on him.
Is there some prohibition against having a single superhero movie? Does Lobo really have to be in this movie for it to be a successful movie?
Well, he's not a superhero. He's a bad guy. Or anti-hero.
He's another major character from another DC.
Did he need to be in the movie, though?
No.
Yes.
Right. No. I'm with Colin on that one.
I agree.
I didn't really see the point of him being there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you have that same problem with the Superman movie with the Justice Gang? Not our title. Not our name.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're obviously trying to develop something. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're doing it the right way.
Okay. I guess that's a question. Yeah. You know, what do you think of the James Gunn DC stuff overall?
I don't know. I think I haven't seen enough of it yet.
Well, it's only been the two movies. Suicide Squad, right? Not Suicide Squad. The Suicide Squad. Peacemaker.
Oh, that all counts?
Yeah. And Superman.
Huh. Okay.
Peacemaker's rad. So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, okay, well, in that case, so far I like it better than the previous the DCU, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And I do as well. I really liked the Suicide Squad.
Yeah,
Peacemaker is terrific. In terms of, like, we haven't gotten that kind of thing from Marvel. We're like a super R-rated superhero thing.
We
don't necessarily need it, but
no.
But we do have it with Peacemaker, and it's very enjoyable.
You didn't watch Deadpool Wolverine?
Oh, I guess we do have that in Deadpool. Yeah, yeah.
Or any Deadpool movie.
I really did not like Deadpool and Wolverine, so I was bored out of my mind.
Oh,
so,
okay.
I liked the first Deadpool.
Yeah,
and the second one, Deadpool and Wolverine, was not for me. It was, I mean, it was fan service, the movie.
Yeah, yeah,
which is fine. And Lobo here is fan service. I think they put Lobo in to try to get some male audience because he's a popular character with men.
Yeah, that's dumb.
I like superheroes regardless of their gender.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I saw somebody on, I don't know, it was Reddit or, I know, it was like on Twitter or something, which, I mean, it's Twitter.
Yeah. Or it's Reddit, to be honest.
Yeah. Where he said that the movie was girl boss bullshit. And I was like, did you watch the movie? Because there's none of that in here.
Right.
Supergirl, it's not presenting Supergirl as this extremely capable person. I mean, it sort of is, but it's not. I think it's just somebody who hasn't seen the movie and just hates it because it's led by a woman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she does Supergirl a whole bunch of things.
Yes.
Right? And so there is that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But she also has weaknesses that are exploited to her deficit.
Yeah.
Ruthie kind of has to step in and save her at one point. So, I mean, it's not like she's, you know, invulnerable.
No.
Completely invulnerable.
No, and especially in the situation that she ends up in, right, on the planet with the two suns. The three-body problem.
Yes.
Unstable planet with the green and yellow suns. Yeah, I just think there's, like, the idea, they decided to keep the, well, we'll put the fluffy animal in danger. Mm-hmm. And that will get everybody on board. Like, first of all, it's not a fluffy animal. It's a CG creation. And that was a huge mistake.
Yeah.
Never having a real dog.
Yeah.
But then undercutting what the graphic novel does, which is a good character bit for Supergirl, is, now Krypto was out of danger immediately. I decided to come with you because you needed the help. You
know? Right. They're undercutting the moral arc, I suppose.
Yeah. And that's really a blind spot. That whoever did this either didn't read the comic or didn't catch that part of it. It's quite important.
Well, or devalued. It wasn't credited in IMDb, so I'm not sure they read the comic.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, is Supergirl going to get any kind of catharsis for the things that truly haunt her by killing Krem of the Yellow Hills? Yeah. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of goes back to say that she is still the, you know, drunken, lazy, irresponsible person she was at the beginning of the movie or the end of Superman movie.
Yeah.
So... it
didn't necessarily put the best foot forward for continuing to have this as a character that's likable and interesting to watch in future movies. I mean, I liked her fine, but it didn't do as much as it
I'd
could
get
have.
Drunk with Supergirl. That'd be rad.
Sure.
But can you get to a red planet, a red sun planet?
Touche.
Well, if you go with her, you can.
Right?
You get one of those rad things where you just put it around your head and it gives you a bubble suit.
Now, the bubble suit was pretty cool.
The bubble suit was pretty sweet.
And they totally did the Christmas Story thing.
Yeah, totally.
Yes. Loved it. I thought that was pretty funny. And you know, at the end, when she kills Krim in the least bloody death I've ever seen in any movie, other than, right. like, you know, you go back far enough where they just, the codes didn't allow them to show blood.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, well, I'm kind of surprised that happened. I don't mind it because he's terrible. Mm-hmm. But also, she said more than once to Ruthie, you know, that you won't be able to live with yourself if you do this kind of thing. And they never presented Supergirl as someone who had killed anyone before.
Yeah.
You know, the comic really talks about the weight of remembering Krypton. And this right. sort of, you know, the movie has that whole Argo City thing, but it doesn't have the nice part of the lead shielding that they put down.
And the breaking down.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it just some missed opportunities with that.
Yeah.
What'd you think of the movie, James?
I think overall I liked it. Not sure I'd rewatch it.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, I give it like a 3.
Yeah.
3 out of 4. I usually go 3.5 for something I would rewatch.
Right.
But yeah, I kind of lump it in with a lot of the post, really for me, post Avengers
right.
MCU.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of movies in between there and Endgame that I was like, I'm never rewatching Civil
sure.
War.
I
don't have fond memories of that movie. I hated Age of Ultron. There's a lot of really generic things. And it's not like a Thor that I will watch over and over just because I really enjoy that one. Maybe it's Chris Hemsworth charisma or the abs.
Yeah,
it's the abs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't feel like the movie really earned Supergirl killing Krem at the end.
No, there was no reason for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think shortcutting the amount of time that they spent pursuing him was a real mistake. Not seeing the blues and the purples. Not
automatically
seeing
shrinking it to 3 days. I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
The second they did that, I'm like, huh, crap.
Yeah.
And like every world, there's a reason that they put up Red Sun Planet, Orange Sun Planet, you know, right. whatever, because all of them kind of looked the same.
Yeah.
So they didn't spend a lot on the set dressing.
They spent a lot of money on something.
They did, yeah.
But, you know, especially the special effects sequences were like dark and muddy, kind of mm-hmm. like I felt like the artwork was,
yeah.
which so I felt like it was kind of accurate to that, if that was an inspiration.
Yeah.
But it's not like you got to see Supergirl do a lot of things. You got to watch Supergirl zip around and be streaks as other things happen. And
sure.
Yeah.
It's like,
sure.
What's the point of that?
Yeah.
I would have rather had the spaceship battle in space. That would have been rad.
Yeah.
Right. Like in the comic.
In the comic. Yeah.
Well, and like having that moment where Ruthie has Krem at her mercy, which of course he's superpowered, so she couldn't.
Right.
And cutting back and forth between Supergirl is taking on the brigands and, mm-hmm. they have kryptonite. I'm just saying that without Comet, it just doesn't work. You didn't like Comet though.
No. He shows up, he's there for a little bit, and then he leaves. It's like...
Horse Ex Machina?
Yeah, Horse Ex Machina. I love that.
Yeah, he did kind of pop out of nowhere, right?
And if you don't know the Supergirl mythology well, you have no idea where this guy comes from.
Right. No, I had to look him up.
That would be me. I'm like, okay, there's a horse. Yeah. Oh, he's a dude now.
Well, it's Shadowfax, right? Shadowfax just happens to be in Rohan.
Yeah. So. I just kind of went with it because you got a super dog already. Why not a super horse?
No, I mean, Shadowfax was the king's horse in Rohan that no one else was allowed to ride, and
he really? Was?
Yes.
Okay, I haven't read the book in so long. See, this is why we need to do Lord of the Rings. You need to make me reread those books.
Yeah.
I will enjoy them, Colin.
No, you won't.
I promise.
I don't want to be on the flip side of this.
He likes being the one that doesn't like stuff.
No, I would like to like this stuff. I'm not a big fan of the comic book,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's got a great set of moral arcs for the characters that are in there until the end. So I don't understand why that's there.
Yeah.
It's almost like, it's the art for me. It's the art movie of comic books.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like, don't make the characters gray. Give me some kind of conclusive thing, but that's a me thing. And I understand that.
Well, so this is me arguing more for Lord of the Rings, because a lot of the problems that I have with the adaptation are making characters more gray, where I understand it's easier to have an arc for someone if they aren't entirely good the entire time. But did you have to do that to Faramir? I'm on your side. Oh, well. I'm on your side is what I'm saying.
Okay.
And I'll listen to the audiobooks read by Andy Serkis. It'll be a good time.
Oh, that would be fun, actually. Yeah, that would be cool.
Anyhow, we're not talking about Supergirl.
Stay on target.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I like the movie. I wish it was doing better because I've enjoyed James Gunn's take on stuff. I really enjoyed Superman.
Did he write this or did he take a screenplay?
No, so he's directed a producer. He didn't direct it either. Yeah.
No, he didn't direct it.
He's just the head of the studio.
Oh. So he greenlit this.
Yeah.
He said, this is a good script. Let's get this director and these filmographers, this special effects team. And
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what his role there was. And I'm not sure what he's working on next. Oh, I guess Superman 2. Right. Man of Tomorrow. That's why they didn't call this one Woman of Tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
Even though it's, quote, adapted from it. So.
Right.
I don't know, man. like the more time goes on, the less I like the movie. So that makes it less likely that I'm going to watch it. And I'm bummed about that because I like to like stuff, which is, that's my other thing, argument for Lord of the Rings. It's like, I like to like stuff. I believe in myself. There's great literary quality to it. I can do this, but we'll do graphic novels first.
Okay.
you have to develop a caloric deficit for literariness and then you can enjoy it.
No, I felt like the comic was very literary. Yeah. The writing, the art, the things that are portrayed, even though I don't like the way they were portrayed, right? I think it was really good, was creative. The depravity you have to get drugged through in order to get there to understand that Krem is really as bad as he is, I don't think they needed to go that deep to really prove the point.
Mm.
And I think if they had picked an ending.
Yeah. No, I mean, no, that's something that I really like is that – that we still maybe haven't completely agreed on what the ending was. So I'm curious to hear from other people who've read this comic because I know a bunch of our listeners are people who vote in the Hugos. And I'm curious. Like, if you've read this one, what did you think of the comic? What do you think of the movie? Do you think it's an adaptation? Is it fair to call it an adaptation? Or should we have just read a bunch of other Supergirl and watched the 1984 movie as well? I don't think you're going to get anybody arguing for that one.
No.
The only thing that I think is, it's not redeeming about it, but just like the fact that the Kryptonians are vulnerable to magic. And that's, you know, if you don't want to get into the generic same on same punching each other, you know, Black Panther did it, Superman, Man of Steel did it. You know, so many Captain America, even it's basically fighting Red Skull is fighting a different version of Captain America who took a different serum.
Right.
Then you have to have some kind of difference to balance the scales, and magic is a way to do that. But it's a weird movie. It has Hart Bachman from Ellis from Die Hard as the love interest for Superman.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Bachner. Hart Bachner. Yeah.
Dolly Parton was actually favored for the Faye Dunaway part.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think that's because she did that Christmas special with Lee Majors, where she actually was, you know, she Lee fought Majors. A witch. In the special.
The night crazy stuff died. Yeah. All right. Well, anything else to say?
We need to rank them.
Yeah, we got to rank them.
Book movie.
Yeah, book movie here. I bought this one, so I have it digitally as well, which made it easy for me to take screenshots to put into my notes.
Cool.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Right. So we are going to get back to doing, we're going to do Judge Dredd. There is not a comic that was adapted into either of the movies. This is an adaptation of the world and the character. And I have not read enough Judge Dredd to... I mean, I know that it is an indictment of American society. It's a British comic.
Right.
And not just of American society. I did get that comic, Judge Dredd America, that I think is more directly an indictment of America, which... Fair enough.
Yeah. Certainly well earned these days.
Yeah. So we'll do that and see if we can get that one out by the end of this month. And then we'll move on with other stuff. You know, you mentioned Constantine. We were talking about Men in Black earlier. So there's lots of veins that we could dig into.
Yeah. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We could do Spider-Man.
Yeah.
We could do Watchmen.
Yeah. Cool. Okay.
All right.
Well, I know that we've put out this plea before for if we're going to do graphic novels, tell us what you'd like us to do. And I know Emmanuel responded way back when we did that, but I don't remember what he said. So tell us again, Emmanuel. And let us know how you rank these, if you liked them. And if there's any graphic novel kind of stuff, we're not going to do Tintin. You and Phil already covered that with Emmanuel.
Tintin, yes.
Tintin for Americans.
You know, I just thought of a good way to torture you. We could do Civil War.
We could. I'd be willing to do it. I have read that comic.
The comic is way better.
Yeah. It's very different. Yeah.
Very different.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think we're wrapped here.
Yep.
So until next time, may the road rise up to meet you, and may the book always fall open to where you left off.
Ciao.
Bye, everybody. No, what I used to do, I should have put this up top with the... I'll put this in the blooper reel. what I used to do is when a new comic book adaptation was coming out, because, you know, we've been in a golden age of comic book adaptations since 2000.
Yeah.
And, you know, since...
Good point.
The X-Men movies, you know, and the Spider-Man movies kind of kicked it all off, right? There was a big letdown between Superman, the movie, and anything else. There were occasional things where they'd blip up.
Oh, and Batman.
Batman, 1989, I used to, when a new movie was coming out, I would buy a run of that comic and read it to kind of go with it. So I read Civil War. Yeah. I read the Infinity Saga.
Yeah, I was trying to think
that's
through,
quite
like,
different too.
If any of these recent Marvel movies have actually been, like, in a compact, like, part of, like Civil War.
Infinity Saga. I mean, it's a
that's
thing,
true.
Right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
It's very different. In the comic, he's doing it to impress Death.
Yeah.
So, Lady Death.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
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 He's wooing Lady Death.
Lady Skeletor, more or less, in the comics. It is exceedingly clement today.
It is a beautiful day to be outside.
Guys.
And aside from the helicopter and the airplane and,
and the train.
And the train. I don't mind the train.
Because you could sort of do Dark Knight, too,
great.
I think. Sort of.
The fan's not hurting anything. I mean, the cicadas, you know.
Yeah.
We found a cicada in our yard.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
They're not the same species of cicada as, as like the deep south ones
that
crazy for 32 years or
yeah,
whatever
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.